an administrator in New Jersey public schools and Jewish day schools in New Jersey and New York City. She's a doctorate in curriculum and teaching from Teachers College, Columbia University. Using the skills acquired in each of these settings, she has been a member of the graduate faculty of Bank Street College of Education for 19 years. In that capacity, she has served as co-chair of teacher education and continues to teach several courses focused on group process and cooperative learning, developing advisories, and curriculum development. She has been a national trainer in cooperative learning for 20 years and has continued to work with children and new and experienced teachers on the preschool, elementary school, and middle school level. She is also a senior facilitator for GroupWorks, a New York City organization that focuses on developing group skills in public schools. I'm also very happy to introduce our technical facilitator, Betsy Kane, who will be working with Harriet tonight. Welcome, Harriet and Betsy. And Harriet, the floor is now yours.
Next slide, please. Thank you. I'm very pleased to join you for this opportunity to begin an exploration of cooperative learning, a topic that's been important in schools all over the world, literally in Europe and in Africa and in every continent. And I believe this is for two reasons. The tremendous amount of research focused in classrooms which suggests that what teachers do and how they interact with students and just as importantly, how students interact with each other has enormous impact on motivation and academic learning. I hope you will participate actively. I am very used to seeing the people I'm working with in a classroom and in all kinds of classrooms. So I welcome your questions. There'll be times when I'll say we'll go on and we'll touch on something that we will talk about this week or next week, but I do want to encourage some active ideas from you, because I think that helps us think about things in much more meaningful ways and is really the essence of cooperative learning. Next slide, please. Most teachers already know that simply putting students together in small groups isn't enough to ensure success for every learner. That's because too many students don't know how to work well together. In addition, many teachers do not know how to develop and implement successful cooperative group work. Over the past 30 years, researchers have studied teachers and classrooms, and the findings I'm going to share with you come from this research, which suggests that what elements are needed to create the kind of learning environment in which every child is successful. Now, I know that some of you already have had experience with small groupings. I hope that you'll learn some new ideas and new twists on what you already know, and we'll build on your existing knowledge base. On the slide, you see five areas that I intend to focus on today, and ending tonight's session with really how to introduce cooperative learning in the classroom. Next slide, please. Now, as I indicate here, cooperative learning is designed to support very high levels of academic engagement. Students work together in small groups. The general idea behind cooperative learning is that by working in small heterogeneous groups and by helping one another master different parts of a particular task, students will be more motivated to learn. And will actually learn more than if they had to work independently. In addition, they'll have the opportunity to forge stronger interpersonal relationships than they would by working alone. Cooperative learning can make an important difference for students and teachers because it provides a way for active involvement and success in the educational process. Next slide, please. focus a little bit about on what teachers and students do in the cooperative learning classroom. I like thinking of the idea that this approach puts teacher and students together at the heart of the classroom environment. Now, just as in any classroom, the teacher organizes the key components of the curriculum. But in a cooperative learning classroom, the various learning activities are structured in a way that students need each other in order to complete assigned tasks. Students both talk and work together in small groups and learn how to take responsibility for their learning and develop critical social skills. By the end of the lesson, it really is helpful when teachers and students actively reflect on their learning and their interaction so that they can build skills for the next time. Next slide. Before we examine details about what's involved in creating a successful cooperative learning classroom, it may be useful to focus on what you already know about group work. So I'd like you to think a little bit in your own mind about what's challenging about working with groups in general, that could be outside of a classroom and in life, and then think a bit about what's challenging about working with classroom groups. Let's go to the next slide. I have a wonderful cooperative learning activity that will help us to do this. This is one of my most favorite activities. It's called a one-minute paper, and you can use this, or a two-minute or three-minute version, anytime you want your students to think very deeply about a question. So what I'd like you to do now is to take a minute and write, rapidly write as much as you can about what is challenging about working with classroom groups. And you're not going to hand them in. The spelling doesn't count this time, but discussions, when you use this activity, discussions are really better because everyone has something written down. So let's just give it a minute so that you can write. Let's go to the next slide. And Debbie is going to write down some of the things that you call in or write in the chats so that we could hear perhaps from different people
just
one idea about what's challenging. Yes.
Harriet?
Mm-hmm. Yes? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Hello?
I'm here.
Hi, Harriet. It's Betsy. I think Judith might be having some trouble with her audio, but I think we're all still here.
Okay. All right. So, anybody have a contribution about what's challenging about working with classroom groups?
The task is clear. The task they have to... Harriet?
Yes?
Hi, this is Leah.
Yes, hi, Leah.
You hang on with the group.
I'm sorry, can you say that again? I'm not hearing you clearly. Oh, I see it now. The group may wait. Okay, let me take a look at them. I'm going to, for people who can't see it, I want to read these. You identified a whole lot here. Okay. There are clearly people who have been working with groups. Okay, let me just get them. Sometimes one or a couple of members do all the group. It's very hard for a teacher to know who did what. Good point. Yes, we will be talking about that. Many personalities in a group. Yes. Okay, the child that wants to be the teacher and give orders to the rest of the group. All of the things that you're mentioning now are examples of what happens when some of the elements that we're going to be talking about aren't clearly worked with. It's hard to keep the group on task, another important idea. Anybody, a teacher may get caught up helping one group and lose track of the other groups. It does happen sometimes. Anybody else have some ideas? I think you all have something written.
When kids have different opinions?
Sure, go ahead.
And they, like, contradict each other and they can't come to agreement on something?
Okay. Debbie, that's a good one to write about. Anybody else? Hard to keep the group on task. Yeah. Okay. All of these are examples of what can happen when students aren't properly prepared for working in a group and are simply put together. Let's go to the next slide and see what we can do with this. We just collaborated around these questions, and clearly there were insights about things that you've tried around grouping. I know that many of you have developed wonderful creative projects, but unless students work together well, it doesn't work so everyone succeeds. However, that doesn't mean that we should discard the idea that group work is a good idea. Next slide, please. I think part of the problem is that many youngsters have little experience working well together. They often have difficulty and need help in listening to each other and taking turns and working together successfully. Now, next week I'm going to focus in great detail on teaching social skills. Today I'll talk about some aspects of it. But that's important area of management at the heart of group work will be at the heart of what we're going to be doing next week. But in general, cooperative, next slide, please. Cooperative learning strategies are designed to teach learners how to work well. And I want to reiterate the fact that there are literally hundreds of wonderful strategies and ideas that we can share and use to make groups much more effective. For example, as you see on the bottom of the slide, no one is born with the social skills needed to work well. Some lucky people learn them from families and teachers and peers. I'm sure you must know people, as I do, who are adults who are still learning them. And I think it's good that we can still learn them. And in addition, we can learn how to teach them to others. Next slide, please. So if you have a successful cooperative learning setup in a classroom, here's what you would see. If you came into the classroom, you would see students like these working together on a particular academic assignment. Discussion requires people to be facing each other face-to-face, chairs a group around a table or a computer, for example. Next slide, please. And if you sat closely to one of these groups, you might hear students discussing part of the task that they're involved in. They may be asking questions, they may be explaining, they may be questioning some aspect of it. It's anticipated in cooperative learning work that students will be talking to each other and learning to communicate in quiet voices so that other groups are not disturbed is an essential component of that. We're going to be talking more about. Okay, I'd like to stop for a moment and encourage a couple of questions. Does anybody have one that they would put into the chat or call in? Okay, I see. Is there something that you want to ask?
Obviously, it's a very long process to get students at a place where they can work together.
Well, but I'm going to suggest some ways tonight that you can begin this process It takes a while to teach students how to disagree with ideas and not the person. That's a higher thinking skill, but there are some very basic beginning kinds of skills that students do need in order to begin. In some classrooms, students need to be taught literally how to talk quietly to each other, how to stay in a group, how to move into a group quietly. And as I'm going to go into greater detail about, we really need to start with where the students are, not where we have an idea of where we want them to be before they're ready. Any other questions now?
There are a number of questions in the chat room now.
Okay. What about the child who's extremely weak and really can't do much of the classwork? Currently, his work is so differentiated that I don't know how he would work with a group. So there may be some things, some activities like those that I will be suggesting tonight that he can do with a group. There may be some things that he would need to be work alone. It depends on the academic activity. Where possible, we try to group students so that they can help each other. There are parts of a group process, as I'm going to explain, that will help them. This is an important question, Marcia, and if this doesn't get answered tonight, will you remind me at the end so that we can focus on this? Miriam asked the question, is this appropriate for younger students? Yes, and I'm going to talk tonight about some things that you can begin to do. It would be wonderful for many of us who teach on the middle school level if more teachers like you ask that question, can we start in kindergarten? That's a great idea, I think. Okay, next slide, please.
Okay, there are two more questions that I
okay, I'm gonna go to those. How should a teacher design groups, homogeneous and heterogeneous? I'm gonna ask you to hold that question. I'm going to be talking about that one. There are some groups you can put people of similar abilities, but it depends on the purpose of the group. And studies have shown that that when groups are set up so that each person can contribute diverse ideas and diverse opinions and diverse talents, that the group project can be much stronger. Marcia, you had asked the question about the youngster who his work is so differentiated. I've tried this a bit, but I see he ends up copying. I don't know what that bell is. Okay. I'm going to ask you to just hold on that, Marcia. There are going to be some hints that I think will be helpful for you. Okay. Let's go to the next slide. And take a look at the role of the teacher. I know that you all already do a lot of things to organize your classroom and learning in your classroom. Teachers plan a schedule and decide what will occur within the times allotted to different subjects. You organize lessons and present concepts and assign tasks and evaluate understanding. But the research suggests that successful group work requires some additional steps and decisions, and you've already kind of hinted at this, and let's take a look at them. These decisions, next slide, please, involve how students are prepared to work together, and I've already mentioned that some special attention to social skills is important, and how parts of the lesson are organized. how the lesson is implemented and how the interaction is processed. The thing to keep in mind is that the challenge in teaching is not covering the material for the students. It's not just telling. It's uncovering the material with the students. Some examples would include presenting several complex questions for the group to solve, incorporating critical thinking for the group. Now, I understand that I'm speaking to people who are from kindergarten through ninth grade. There may be some of you who teach higher grades. Presenting ideas and asking students to do something with those ideas together is at the heart of it. Let's go to the next slide. Now, the question is, does a teacher need to be a Wonder Man or a Wonder Woman? I think you're probably already all wonderful teachers, but cooperative learning requires focused attention. I like that slide too. Cooperative learning requires focused attention on the interaction between the learners. And you and your questions have really touched on these, indicating that this is where we need strategies. It's a challenge, it's true, but there are well-developed strategies that can help you succeed. Next slide, please. So instead, we read so much in the newspapers of emphasizing that teachers should work harder and do more. Well, I think we need to focus on learning better approaches that concentrate on where and when the burden of learning shifts to the learner. I don't believe anyone can learn for another person. Everyone must do this. The teacher presents, and then the students need to help each other actually do the learning. Next slide, please. I'm not so sure. Judith, is that
yes.
Is that face crying or?
I will be in touch with Betsy.
Okay, thank you. Okay, another aspect of the role of teacher is understanding that part of the time he or she is a guide on the side instead of a sage on the stage. And what I mean by that is there's some direct teaching when academic content is being introduced and explained. Then the teacher facilitates the interaction within the groups during group work time. Now, facilitating this interaction in the groups is called monitoring. Here, the teacher moves around the classroom from group to group, sitting in on and listening to what's actually going on within the groups. But everything in the classroom is very interconnected. The parts of cooperative learning literally fit together to support each other. Each is dependent on the other. So what the task is, how the children are prepared, how things are organized, and how they work together in those groups really affect every other part of it. Let's go to the next slide. Let's see, that's that interconnected jigsaw puzzle. Next slide, please. The literature on cooperative learning, providing time, yes, the next slide, please. Providing time to talk is a very precious and limited classroom resource, and yet it's a very important part of cooperative learning. I want to cite the research of Lev Vygotsky, who worked with special needs children in Russia in the 1930s. And among his findings was that when learners could explain their understanding to another learner, when children could talk to each other and explain what they understood, that they used language that was much simpler than that of the adult or teacher. Children listened to each other in explanations very differently than they listened to the adult in the room. He had a very interesting idea that if you can't explain something to another person, you may not really understand it yourself. So let's stop and use another simple cooperative learning strategy. I'd like you to think back to two or three key ideas about cooperative learning you've already noted down, if you're taking notes on what I'm saying or that you already are thinking about. And if you could prioritize them, one, two, or three, one being the highest, what was the most important idea so far to you? Let's see if we can find this out. Oh, that face is applauding. Thank you. What were you applauding? That's Mrs. Sabo? Okay. That students learn. Okay. Thank you, Razel.
The teacher is a guide and not the one who's teaching everything.
Yes. Okay, another idea? That children learn the most from each other, yes. Okay. Students need to be taught how to work in a group. Good, Ellie. Sharing ideas, helping each other. Anything else that you thought was important so far? Yeah, to be able to use one's own words. Yeah, social skills are needed to work in groups. I suspect, Sheila, and everyone else, that all of you knew that. The question is how to teach those skills and when. Anything else that you thought was important so far? You see, when you are all sharing these ideas and repeating it, you're helping to reinforce that in everybody else who's part of this webinar. And when you ask children in the classroom to say, what were some of the most important ideas you just heard and what I, the teacher, just presented, you're providing for that some repetition, but helping. By what students say to you then, you hear what was most important. And you also know from this go-round like this on what students aren't mentioning. So that kind of gives a clue to you as a teacher about what you can read. Helping uncover materials, yep, and social skills, yes, for sure. Okay, next slide, please. There's enormous amounts of research that suggests there are five basic elements of successful cooperative learning, and I'd like to pay some attention to that, okay? Positive interdependence, face-to-face interaction, individual accountability, the teaching of social skills, and processing. All of these five are critical in a fully developed lesson. So let's talk about what each one is, and as you do, think about how you can incorporate these in some of your teaching. You know, usually I recommend that cooperative learning be introduced in September, at the beginning of a school term, and we're at the beginning of May. So I've been thinking about that, and in a few minutes, I'm going to present some ideas that you can start this week. And not only start, but working with small groups, pairs to start, two people at a time, will talk about some things that you can start this week and that we'll build on in part two next time. So let's begin now with the next slide. And I'd like to talk first about positive interaction. This is the way the teacher organizes the task so that the students absolutely need each other in order to complete it. The slogan, one for all and all for one, is a part of the cooperative learning jargon. I put it there. But really, students are shown how to help each other overcome problems and complete whatever task has been assigned. This may be a little bit of an assistant, exchange of information, challenging each other's reasoning, and encouragement to keep one another highly motivated. All of those are part of positive interaction. But here's some examples. If they're working together, you may give them one piece of paper with the directions for an assignment so that they both have to use that piece of paper in order to finish the assignment. It may be that a lesson is set up where one reads a paragraph and the other one summarizes, and they begin to work through an article together. In order to finish it, they need each other. I have another one on the slide. One paper is completed by two people, and they're working together and both sign off on this. Or each member has a role in a group task. One may be the writer, another one may be the reader. This is an example of how something can be set up, how a task can be set up so that the group needs each other. Now notice I'm talking about small groups because my recommendation is to start with pairs, two people. Each person then only has to deal with one other personality. Somebody mentioned personalities before. I think it's easier to begin systematic teaching of cooperative learning using pairs very carefully. I'll be talking more about that. Next slide, please. In order to establish positive interdependence and face-to-face interaction, they really go together. It's really important to have the students who are working together, the pairs that I've been describing, sit facing each other as they work. If you've ever had to do some learning with some person, another person who is not interested in doing that or rolls their eyes or clearly is disinterested in you, you know how that can affect motivation. Eye contact is very important, enhances communication. So when you're working and teaching children how to work together, you ask them to sit together, to face each other, and to look at each other when they're talking to each other. The verbal and nonverbal responses from each other is a source of feedback for a student. In cooperative learning, someone who is in a group and doesn't speak is seen as uninvolved and is not contributing to the learning process. So part of the teaching, which we're going to be talking about, is that when you start this, to say to the students, I expect everyone in the class to be helping each other. And you're going to be in pairs of groups, and that means that at any given time, half the students in your class are going to be talking. The highest level of active engagement, but unless students are encouraged to talk quietly, I know that that can be very, very hard. Okay. Next slide, please. Individual accountability. The slogan in cooperative learning is no hitchhiking, nobody gets a free ride. And what this really means is that every individual person is accountable. It may be that if you have two people working together, everyone has to take the quiz or hand in an individual assignment. They may study something together, but they have individual work and individual accountability. And somebody mentioned the idea in groups that one person may do all the work. Well, if everyone is accountable, then that's really not possible. That's not acceptable in cooperative learning. Common ways of ensuring this are giving a quiz to each person, or even as you go around telling students that you're going to ask any one of them to talk about what the group is doing. And it's a way to check to make sure that everyone is actively involved. Next slide, please. Now we come to that all-important focus on interpersonal skills. Positive interdependence is unlikely to occur if students don't know how to make the most of these face-to-face interactions. You can assume that the interpersonal skills that most students possess are probably not highly developed. They often need to be taught such basic skills as leadership, trust building, and clear communication. Conflict management is another area that we're going to be talking about. But another way of thinking about conflict within a cooperative learning group is that differences of opinion can be very constructive if they're used to search for more information or to rethink one's conclusions. For example, if you have a pair disagreeing on not on an answer in math or on an interpretation of someone in literature, and you ask each of them to explain their ideas and talk about these differences of opinions, it can open up understanding because both of these viewpoints have something that the students feel strongly about. But if it's just seen as a problem, it can destroy group cohesion. If it results in students stubbornly clinging to a position or calling another person by a name that's upsetting, that's not a constructive use of conflict. We'll talk more about it. I don't know how many of you were able to obtain circles of learning. Can you show me by just raising your hand so I can see if anyone was, I understand everyone received information about that. Do I see any hands? I see some no's. I see a hand, thank you. A couple more hands. Circles of Learning by David Johnson and Roger Johnson is available in paperback on Amazon or online on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. I assure you I have no interest particularly in the purchase of the book, except it's a wonderful resource. It's quite, I think it's about $12. And I think you'll find yourself returning to it many, many times and adding support to some of the things that I'm thinking about. Next slide, please.
What was the name of the author?
Yes, it's David Johnson and Roger Johnson. And there's one more author, Edith Johnson Hollyback, their sister. Circles of Learning is the name of the book. If you go online after the webinar, it should be not difficult to find this. Okay?
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Edna, could you help me understand what you just said?
I tried to send a private message on the chat. I couldn't do it.
Oh, okay. Okay. The role of group processing. This is that fifth element of the five. And this is a very, very important part. They're all important, but this one is often overlooked, and it really shouldn't be. And this is the taking time after a cooperative learning lesson to stop and to reflect with individuals and with the group. One of the things I like doing is asking a group, each of the groups, to think of two things they did well together and one thing they need to work on to improve their group functioning. Students often will say, well, we got it done, and we helped each other. But they may come up with the idea that they need to get started faster, that they weren't watching time well, that they should have asked for help when they first realized that they needed. And that's an example of identifying skills and issues that need some attention. Next slide, please. Here are some additional reasons for integrating cooperative learning in the classroom. It's really vital for students to have peer support, and when this is set up properly, they do get it. They do get support from each other. They help each other learn, so more learn. And they get to know each other in a way that builds community and life skills in some very, very significant ways. Next slide. Now I'd like to take time, we have a few more minutes, to talk about, and I told you I was going to get to this, how to introduce cooperative learning to your students. And as I mentioned earlier, I know it's May and it's not the beginning of the year, but I have a couple of steps that I think will be helpful in learning about your students and how they're working together and the kinds of things that you can do to be helpful. I think also if you haven't been working with groups very much, these steps can let you experiment in very small doses. As you're checking your own comfort level, seeing how your students do, I really recommend starting small. Setting up random pairs of students, counting off with numbers or picking numbers out of a hat. If you have, for example, 24 students and putting 1 to 12 on twice on slips of paper and having students pick them, very quickly they can go into pairs. I think when you start cooperative learning, setting it up randomly is very helpful. Students won't object as much. Oh, I don't want to work with that person, or I won't work with him, or I won't work with her. It's important when you begin this to say, it's much easier in September, I know, to say in this classroom everybody works with everybody else. Everybody helps. And so in the beginning of the year when you're establishing routines and ways of being together in the classroom, incorporating this is much easier. But I think you can still do this in the beginning of May by saying, well, we're going to be working on this for about 5 minutes, and everybody will get a turn to work with different people. And we're going to learn how to work well with everyone. You also might want to say that learning to work with everyone, not just our close friends, is an important life skill. Next slide. So here's step one. Start with pairs of students engaged in very short, high-interest interactions. As the first and most important part of promoting cooperation among students, structure positive interdependence. So at the beginning of the day or at the end of the day, provide 3 to 5 minutes for randomly chosen pairs. Directions should include that they should speak to each other in quiet voices, make sure each person gets a chance to talk,
And tell them, this is important now, how much time is available. Because if you're providing 5 minutes, they may need a reminder after 2.5 minutes to quit so the other person gets a chance to talk. And in your beginning interactions, what I recommend is some high interest information about themselves. It could be exchanging about a hobby, a favorite book, a recent trip, a favorite TV program or movie, something about themselves that they are willing to share with another person. Okay, next slide, please.
Harriet, we have a question about partners who distract each other, don't work well together in this random pairing.
Well, you don't know that this is how, excuse me, let me see if I'm understanding. You're saying you put two people together and this group is distracting each other?
It looks like it from the posting.
Yeah. Can you hold that question and let's just go through this next part of the teacher's role and see if some of this will help you with that, okay? You give the task directions. Tell the students in advance that you're coming around to listen to their interactions. This monitoring really helps students stay on task. It's important to monitor and to move around from group to group. And I recommend stopping to listen for positive interaction. And intervene, as in the example of these two youngsters, to encourage cooperation only if there's off-task behavior. If they're on task because they're talking about something that interests them themselves, there may not be off-task behavior. Notice in these activities that I'm talking about, this is not academic work. You're introducing pairing and you're introducing small group interaction this way, less likely to have off-task behaviors. I also think it could be helpful that if you, as you walk around, you take some notes on the positive interaction you observe. And after the allotted time, share these with your students. If you notice something significant, mention it. But be careful not to embarrass anyone. After the time is up, process by asking students whether they liked having this opportunity to talk and why they liked it. Listen very carefully to their response, what they like, what they found difficult, and what they need to make this kind of interaction more successful. In my experience with this, with students, even in the middle of the school year, they will say, oh, we didn't have enough time, which is an opportunity for you to say, well, we'll try something like this again later this week. It's important to get started quickly and not to waste this time that you have. Please go to the next slide. If you and your students are comfortable, there's a step two to this homework assignment that I'm giving you for this week. You could... If you can, incorporate the ideas from students if possible. Provide 5 minutes to perhaps review an academic content prior to a quiz, putting two people together randomly and giving them time to do that. Or look over homework for the next day for just a few minutes in these pairs. Or identify key concepts from a lesson the way we did earlier. Just 5 minutes. You may not have time to process it every time you try this, but if you can do it a few times and take notes on what the students say and bring them next week, I think it will be helpful to build on this kind of information. Next slide, please. We're really just about at the conclusion for part one. And tonight I gave a general introduction and a look at some of the parts of cooperative learning that are critical. I would hope that for next time that you come prepared to talk about your initial steps. If you decide to wait before introducing this in your own classroom, join us anyway as we begin to collaborate even more, because you'll hear from others about what they tried and what parts worked and what parts were problematic, so that we can help each other collaboratively build on the skills. As I mentioned before, my plan is to spend much more time on the teaching of social skills. There are about 40. This goes from the simplest and just going into a group to really working on complex ideas and helping each other with them. We start with wherever your class is. If you're lucky enough to be teaching fifth grade and teachers in first, second, and third, and fourth grade already did this beginning work, you're going to obviously start on a higher skill level. But that's true in math, and it's true in reading, and it's true in language, and it's true in social skills, too. We need to start with where the kids are, not with necessarily where they want we want them to be. Also on this slide, I just want to mention the name of that book, New Circles of Learning. It's The New Circles of Learning, Cooperation in the Classroom and School. But before we go, I think we have 5 more minutes. Let me go back to Marcia. Marcia, I don't know. Was there anything that you found tonight that was helpful in your attention to the student talking about?
I haven't found a good answer that'll work for me yet. I've had this student for several years, and I just find that I just have to differentiate everything in the class for him significantly. And I've done work, and I see that he loves being with the group, and he talks in the group. He doesn't talk about, significantly about what the topic really is, but he loves to think that he is participating and helps the group. So that's a positive for him, even though, in essence, he's really not helping the group in any way, but he wants to keep up, and whatever they're doing, like when we do science experiments, I do it in groups like that, and he just is very happy to just copy what the rest of the group has worked on. The rest of the group works really well. They try to include him, nobody ever exclude him, but he just ends up copying what they have on their papers.
Okay, I'm going to do some thinking, Marcia, about this, and I'll And maybe we can start with this next time too. It's a hard one, and I can I understand figuring out how to include him in at least part of this could be a helpful thing for him and for the class. Anybody else have something they want to mention now? Oh, you're welcome.
Yes.
Okay.
This is Javi. I have a
Hello.
Student. Hi, this is Javi. I have a student that likes to run the show, no
yes.
matter which group she's in, and I have given them that little sheet to say what works well and what doesn't.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the others in the group will always say, that we like to work, and so-and-so always tells us what to do and how to do it, and we don't like it. And they're 100% right.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult. It would be much easier if she worked independently, but that would defeat the purpose. So how do we incorporate that child that nobody wants to be with because she just bosses them around all the time?
We're going to talk next week about roles in the groups. And it sounds to me as though she needs a role in the group, but so do the others.
They have roles. She likes to play them all.
Yes, she likes to play them all. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so she's dominating.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do the students have a chance to talk about what is hard in their group? Do they do some processing?
Yes, a little bit, and they do tell her what they don't like about it.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Till next time.
Yeah, yeah. And when she hears that, what happens?
She acknowledges. She just can't help herself.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about helping her understand that she really isn't helping the other students. Tell me your name so I have this down.
Chubby.
Chubby. Okay,
yeah, I
Chubby.
Thing.
Pardon me?
Could I?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, this is Marcia. I once heard something at a course that if you give everybody a certain number of chips, you know,
yes.
chips,
mm-hmm.
and every person talks, they put a chip in the middle. And when you've used up your chips, you're out. You can't.
Yeah, that's a five chip strategy. And you use them up, that is a way to point out that somebody is talking about that. Let's talk about
Thank
chips
you.
Some more next time. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Who is it who suggested it? Marcia? Thank
yes.
you, Marcia.
Thank you.
Okay. How are we with time, Judith?
We are, Harriet, you're amazing. It is 9 o'clock on the dot.